So please join me in welcoming Addie Gerard. Addie is going to be closing us out today with her presentation, Become a Hero. And Addie has no bio.
Yeah.
Okay, well then I'm just going to talk about nice things I know about Addie. So Addie and I met a couple of years ago at an open source event in Ireland and became well acquainted and fast friends for many reasons. She is an expert in inner source marketing and communications, and she has recently started a new role as an open source program office lead for a medical device startup. And I will leave it to Addie to say other amazing things about herself as she wishes to do so. So I'm going to hand the mic over to you.
You should say great things about you because there are many.
And then we're going to do the traditional, it's 4 minutes past, instead of it's 5 minutes past, we will do a formal welcome with applause and invite our speaker to continue the remarks.
All right, thank you, Leslie. I'm excited to be in the community room and talk to you guys about becoming a hero. So, who here has read Snow Crash by Neal Stephenson? Show of hands. Okay, good. If you haven't, it's okay. I will do my best to describe the scenarios and characters. I highly recommend it. It's a cyberpunk classic, and it's super, super fun. And so when I was reading Snow Crash, I was struck by some similarities between our scenario today and open source. And I believe that open source as a practice is at a crossroads, a very significant one that will determine whether or not and how open source will proceed in the future. And so I'm going to use examples from Snow Crash and also from history to try and illuminate that. The main character in the story Snow Crash is Hero Protagonist, which is a nod to Joseph Campbell's book from 1949 entitled A Hero with a Thousand Faces. And in it, he talks about the hero's journey. A hero's journey includes transformations, it includes challenges, but ultimately what it does is it brings back a benefit to the entire community. And of course, in open source, we know exactly what that is because we're here because of the heroes before us. So let's take a moment and look at where we come from. We know that in the 1940s and 50s, software collaboration was open and free, and people were just talking about different ideas, and there was a lot of excitement around it. And then something changed. Companies began selling machines, and software became business. There was money to be made. And so what was once freely talked about and looked at became hoarded by companies. And this is where we meet our first hero, Richard Stallman. Richard Stallman was an MIT programmer, and he had a vision for the future that we could have free software. That was his vision. And so with that, he launched the GNU project. And his motivation, when you ask him about it, was he wanted to reinvoke a cooperative spirit among computer users. And I think that that is a very, very important thing for us to consider today, as well as in our future. He launched the GNU project, and then in 85 he released the Bulletin, which contained the four freedoms of software. I'm sure you all know them, but we'll just repeat them for the sake. The freedom to run the program for any purpose. The freedom to study, modify the program. The freedom to redistribute copies. The freedom to redistribute modified versions, right? Those four freedoms are the principles for open source or open software. Free software, open source, right? Those are the principles. That's why we exist. And it was an exciting time, right? The Freedom Software Foundation created licenses that protected free software. Companies started doing patents so they could hoard it. Very lively moment. And they realized really quickly they needed an operating system. Enter the young Finnish student, Linus, who, as we know, contributed the Linux kernel to the world. Huge moment, right? Huge moment for free software. And so the struggle continued. They wanted companies to start doing this, and so they needed more heroes. So people came out of the woodwork, right? They had Denise Cooper at Sun System, who fought on the inside of an organization to tell them about the principles of free software, right? She eventually started the OSPO that helped corporations have a structure that help them understand what is free software and why is it valuable to us as a company. Huge work, right? Simon Phipps continued that work. Who's read The Cathedral and the Bazaar? Big moment. Eric Raymond and Bruce Perens co-founded the Open Source Initiative. That organization, that institution in our world is fundamental and has been fighting for the rights of open source for as long as this practice has been alive. It's wonderful, right? But they weren't alone. Free software was really not palatable to business owners. They couldn't, you know, free software, this doesn't work. And so Tim O'Reilly and others gathered together in California and they discussed rebranding. Thus the term open source came onto the scene, right? Another big moment where companies were like, hey, you know what? This could work. We could use this. Michelle Baker, right? The release of the Netscape browsing code, huge pivotal moment. Brian Bellendorf and the original eight, the Apache Way, all of these heroes and many more fought to bring us to today. And where is open source today, right? Open source is in, open code is in 97% of code bases. 80% of code bases have between 1 to 200 open source dependencies. According to a study in Harvard, the demand side value of open source is $8.8 trillion. For the last couple of years at the United Nations, leaders around the globe for open source and OSPOs have been discussing how OSPOs and open source is critical to driving forward the sustainable development goals that will help the world. Open source is on the global stage. That's where we're at. And do you know why? Do you know why we're on the global stage? Because we've created something valuable. Incredibly valuable. And when you create something valuable, the powers that be take interest. They take interest. Let's go into Snow Crash for a minute. When you look at the environment in Snow Crash, they talk about the streets being franchised owned. Do you know what that means? It means a couple of really powerful people own the streets. In fact, in that story, there is Mr. Lee Hong Kong, who owns franchises. There is Uncle Enzo, who's the head of the mafia, and he also owns franchises. You have Bob L. Reif, who's a telecommunications mogul, and he owns the technical infrastructure of the world in Snow Crash. They own the spaces. The communities are fragmented into burbclaves, which basically create their own rule of law, and it's a pretty chaotic place. At the beginning of the story, we meet Hiro, and he is a pizza delivery guy. He works for Uncle Enzo, and he is trying to get a pizza to a destination on time. And as he does that, things go awry. Lots of things. One thing after another thing after another thing. And everything he tries, he's not able to get that pizza there on time. He crashes the car, right? Cannot get there, no matter what he does. I think there's some parallels to that because open source, free software, has had struggles since the beginning. We have had lurking challenges that we have not addressed that are problems in our practice. And over the years, they have compounded. Let's talk about them. Who here personally has experienced burnout or knows someone who has? Raise your hand. Know somebody who has? Stop. Keep your hands up. Hands up. Let's take a look around the room. What we call this is a systemic problem. And think about across this university and across the globe how many other people would have their hands up too. Do you know how you solve sustainability? You have people to support your project and you have money. That's how you solve sustainability, right? Nobody wants another XZ Utilis instance. Another lurking problem that we have is security risks and dependencies, dependency vulnerabilities. I hope you've read the Synapse 2024 report. If you haven't, I'm going to go through a couple of data points for you right now. 88% of hardware and semiconductor industries contain high-risk open-source vulnerabilities. 87% of manufacturing, industrial, and robotics industries contain high-risk open-source vulnerabilities. 67% of AI, BI, ML, big data contain high-risk open-source vulnerabilities. And the shocking fact is that at the time of those vulnerable component downloads, 96% of them had a safer alternative. Nobody wants another heartbleed moment or log4j moment. Nobody wants that, right? We get a bad rep for that. This is a problem. And of course, we're all familiar with the corporate issue whereby people come, they take the code, they use the code, and they contribute nothing back, right? Nothing financial, they don't give their time, they don't donate bug solutions, nothing. And so when you look at that and you look at where open source is today, we've created kind of a digital commons, or a tragedy of the commons of sorts. Not exactly, but sort of. I'll give you a couple of other examples. How many of you have seen a company say, we are open source, and they're not? Right? I know. I've seen it. They're not open source. And as a consequence of some of these problems, you see articles where they say, you know what? You shouldn't use open source. It's not secure. It's not compliant. Could be a Nebraska situation. You just can't, you have to go with commercial. You just can't use it. Right? That doesn't help us. That's not what we want to have happen. And what's sad is, it's kind of true. So Ostrom won a Nobel Prize for her work in 1990. For something called governing the commons, and she postulated that there are three ways to prevent this situation. Number one, community management. We're here, so we'll move past. Privatization, obviously we're not for that one. Can anyone guess the third? Regulation. The European Union has just created the CRA. The Cyber Resiliency Act is going to change the way open source is practiced. There are now four areas of requirements that we are going to have to adjust: documentation, risk assessments, conformity assessments, and vulnerability reporting within 24 hours of finding that vulnerability. Open source isn't staying the way it has been. Those who are non-compliant could be fined up to 15 million euro. Open source is changing. And how that regulation is put into effect will impact what happens to open source. In Snow Crash, the bad guy, Bob Reif, he pushes this virus called Snow Crash. And he pushes it out because he wants power to control. That's what he wants. And he pushes it out to the people who could or would fight back. That's who he goes after. The GDP of the globe is 110 trillion. It's 110 trillion. The value, the demand side of open source is 8.8 trillion. That's a pretty valuable asset. And the person who gets to control that, that's a lot of power, isn't it? That's a lot of power. I think we are in a place where we need to ask ourselves, what can we do? And I suggest there are four things. Number one, when people say something is open source, please don't say, no, it's not. Please. Everyone in this room understands what open source is. We are the advocates for that practice. You know who doesn't know what open source is? The entire globe. No, they're not open source does not help the world understand what we practice or what we fight for on a daily basis. You know what does? You know what? That's not open source. Let me tell you why. They do XYZ. Open source is ABC. Herein lies the problem. And say it pleasantly so people want to talk to you about it. Right? The second thing that we need is we have to communicate the value of open source better. And I think we need to start communicating that value, especially within corporations. Now, there are a couple of organizations that do that really, really well and help equip people to do it. InterSource Commons is one of them. The To Do Group is another one. But unless we are able to express why open source is something they should do, we might lose ground. Number three, we have to advocate and start working at collecting the value of our contribution and distributing that back to those people who are doing the work, the maintainers and the contributors. There are several organizations that do a very good job of this. Open Collective, NLNet, the Sovereign Tech Fund. Is it enough? Absolutely not. But it's a start, and we need to do more of it. We need to do more of it, because we have a fiscal problem. Lastly, we have to engage in policy and regulation. Have to. Regulation is not going to slow down or stop. It's going to speed up. We have to engage with the policymakers. And I'm excited to say that the Open Regulatory Compliance Working Group that the Eclipse Foundation is hosting welcomes people to join and talk about that. And they are engaging with policymakers. That happened on Thursday. On Friday, the Open Forum Europe had a policy summit where they got together with the policymakers and the open source, and they started talking. We have to have this dialogue. Other organizations that are great for this is OGA, Open Solutions for Government, right? Teach the government why they should adopt open source solutions as opposed to the alternative. Help them get on board with that. There are a couple of historical stories I want to tell really quickly in my last couple minutes, and a couple of historical references that I think are applicable. As a globe, we faced COVID. And the medical professionals and practitioners and equipment makers are a very highly proprietary group. And they couldn't really innovate, and they didn't really work together to make sure that the populace was okay. And as a consequence, a lot of people did not do so well. It was a very tough time. Now, a lot of medical people made a lot of money, but we didn't come together to solve that challenge that we faced, right? I work for an organization that works in biotech, and I'm really excited because we are open sourcing technology that will enable people to detect the transmission of disease through breath. And it's open source, which means everyone in the globe can take this and be able to decide and determine whether or not they've been exposed. That's a big deal. You know how you fight a virus? You have to know where it is. Because new ones come up, and it's a risk. there was a, in the 1700s, there was a situation that's a lot like this. And I want to talk to you about it. I want to introduce to you a gentleman, a young war chief by the name of Tecumseh. Tecumseh was a war chief for the Great Shawnee Nation. And the Great Shawnee Nation had a problem. They had this beautiful hunting ground. Beautiful, lush, rich with resources. It was their home. They respected it and they protected it. It was wonderful. And just like anything of value, somebody came and they said, you know what? We'd like to take that. So the Shawnee Nation got together and they asked themselves, what do we do? This powerful entity is coming and they're going to take it from us. What do we do? And Tecumseh stood up and he said this: any child can snap with ease the single hair of a horse's tail, but not the strongest man nor the wildest stallion can break the woven hair that makes a rope. The ending for the Shawnee Nation is a sad one. You see, they didn't come together. And that powerful entity pushed them out. And they ended up on a reservation where they were told what they could do and how they could do it and where they could do it. The lesson of Tecumseh was that he went out not just to his own tribe, but to all the tribes. He went to the Cherokee, and he went to the Chippewa, and he went to the Delawares, and he went to all of them to tell them, we must become the rope. The rope that can withstand the powerful who have come to take away what is precious and sacred. That which creates freedom and sustains those things which are good. And in this time, we too, each one of you and all of us together, must become like Tecumseh to our own community and to our own tribe. We must stand for the freedoms. We must stand for the freedoms so that in the generosity of that spirit, the good things of open source can continue on. Because in the absence of that spirit, there is only a desire for profit and control. And the ends and the consequences of that is pain and suffering, as we've learned today. And so I say to each of you, we must now. Now is the time for us all to become the hero. And that is my speech. Thank you very much.